Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger. Fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
What's the line from, I think, Godfather 3? Just when I think I'm out, they pull me back in. Maybe Kirby Smart doing that a little bit. So he goes on 680 The Fan, a show there on Wednesday night, and this is pretty interesting. You know, for the most part, the hay is in the barn for the 2021 class, not just for Georgia, but for everybody. And it was a quiet conclusion to that cycle for Georgia. There was the head-to-head battle with Alabama for Terry and Arnold. Bama won. You shake their hand, tip your cap, you move on, you get ready for the next battle. But based on something that Kirby Smart said on Wednesday, and this has been getting kind of a lot of chatter in the message board ecosystems and, you know, places around where Georgia fans kind of get together and talk. What did Kirby Smart mean when he left the door open that Georgia might bring in someone still as a part of the 2021 class? Well, courtesy of our friends over at 680 The Fan and the interview that Smart did there on Wednesday night, I want to give you a little bit of a chance to hear this for yourself, and we will see if we can determine ourselves exactly what Kirby's talking about here when he references some outside the box thinking. Let me let you hear Kirby from 680, and then we shall talk about it.
Well, we're always actively looking. You know, as soon as a kid pops in, kid jumps in from a different place, we're always looking and investigating guys. And, you know, we're really slow to jump on something like that, because for us, we got to know that kid's going to be able to play right away, and he's got to be able to help us and use it that way. So, you know, we'll look to see. I think at the end of some spring practices, you'll see some more movement in there when guys are coming out of spring to kind of see where they are on depth charts, and there'll be another movement of guys, and we'll be looking to get some guys. But we're also always looking at high school guys. You know, there's two or three scenarios that are out there that people aren't thinking outside the box, that it'll be interesting to see if those play out. If you look back last year at this time and said, okay, if a kid was not signed, how did they end up at a place? You know, there's been reclassifications. There's been kids that announced where they're going out of the portal that they're not actually signed. You know, you don't actually sign until you enroll. So there's a lot of wiggle room left for a lot of these kids, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
So that's obviously very, very interesting, and there's a lot to unpack from that, and most of this for me is going to be conjecture, because I honestly don't know what Kirby Smart means when he says that. The one thing, though, that it's obvious, Smart saying, if we're going to bring somebody in, we've got to make sure that guy can play for us. This Georgia program has certainly graduated past the point of needing practice bodies or guys just to fill out the 85. Anybody that Georgia would add, especially if you have to be kind of creative about the way in which you add him, anything, you know, along those lines is going to have to be someone that has a chance to make a major contribution to the program. We would certainly all understand that. But as far as some of the outside the box thinking with who could be added right now, Smart does mention the notion of reclassification. If you're thinking about a recent precedent for that, think about how Tony Grimes, the very good defensive back from the state of Virginia who ended up at North Carolina as a part of the class of 2020 when he was initially supposed to be a part of the class of 2021. That's an example recently of how a reclassification has played big and paid big dividends for one of Georgia's recruiting rivals, in that case, North Carolina. As far as other stuff that goes on, and as I said before, this is just total conjecture on my part. I'm literally just pulling this out of thin air. But think about the situation with like Brew McCoy, who's, you know, kind of involved in USC and Texas, and he arrives on campus, decides he's not happy. Now he wants to go somewhere else, and kind of, you know, all the things that kind of go along with that. You know, is there one of those scenarios that could kind of play out for Georgia? Obviously, I don't know. And I certainly wouldn't want to contribute unfairly to the rumor mill on this. But if you look around, there are guys who've kind of maybe made their pledge and, you know, become a part of SEC classes. Some of them have said they're not happy about that. I'm not saying this guy would end up at Georgia, but as a for instance of some of the stuff that kind of goes on, think about Dylan Brooks, the outside linebacker from Alabama that signed at Tennessee, said that he wanted out of his letter of intent once Jeremy Pruitt got fired. It's a very good chance that Georgia doesn't even need someone like Brooks. They're kind of filled out at that outside linebacker position possibly, but there could be other guys out there like that who've, you know, gone somewhere, decide they don't like it, whatever else. You're just kind of left to wonder what all this would be. But the other thing that you'll say about this is this. We talk about this all the time, that life kind of runs on parallel tracks. There are good and bad things happening at the same time. And I've said before that the liberal way in which player movement has been embraced, I think, is a potential problem. I think it threatens the stability of college football, and that instability could eventually threaten college football strength. I'm just kind of old school about some of that kind of stuff. I am not in favor of the wild, wild west when it comes to transfers. However, if that is the way things are going to go, and if that is the way that college football is going to kind of be, it does create a really fun atmosphere around the sport when it comes to potential player additions, even if what Smart's referencing here never comes to fruition, or if the actual addition is somewhat less famous than some of the other names that we would talk about here. It's still kind of just fun conjecture. It's still kind of just fun chatter. It's like I grew up with the, you know, the Hot Stove League in Major League Baseball, which kind of quickly became all the obsession over NFL draft talk and free agency. I think NBA Twitter has taken that probably to another level with the way that sport gets talked about during the offseason. There's a lot of professional sports chatter that almost seems more popular than the actual in-season chatter for that sport. I don't think that's true for college football, but there's no doubt that the roster management aspect of football, who you can add, how you fill out your 85, is there someone from someone else's roster that you have a chance to go out there and get? That kind of off-season chatter for college football, I think, is a fun thing, even if all the, like, you know, rampant player movement overall, I think, for the sport isn't necessarily a great thing. So I'll put a link to the full interview with Kirby Smart when I post the show later on to the worldfamousdognation.com, and you can kind of decide for yourself what you think Smart means and the likelihood that maybe Georgia still adds someone as a part of this 2021 class. It was certainly an interesting assertion from Smart there on that. All right, now let me shift gears to this. Super Bowl coming up on Sunday. Many of you getting excited. I honestly don't know what the social landscape is for Super Bowl parties right now, who's doing what. I'm not really even plugged into that world right now to even know kind of, you know, how open people are to even get together around this time. Obviously, last year's Super Bowl was one of the last big events we had prior to the world kind of becoming very, very different. So, you know, I guess we're just sort of thankful we even have a Super Bowl to get to. Bucks and Chiefs, and obviously from a Georgia fan standpoint, there's a lot of intrigue related to what Mecole Hardman, the former Georgia wide receiver, might do back in the Super Bowl for the second consecutive year. With that in mind, I want to pull up some of these player prop bets that you can get. This is courtesy of our friends over at William Hill. I actually don't know anybody there. I don't know why I said they're our friends, but William Hill Sportsbook has these out. So odds on Mecole Hardman to score the first touchdown on Sunday, 18-1. Odds on him being the leading receiver in the game, the former Georgia wideout, 20-1. Odds on him being the first Chiefs reception, 12-1. Over under on total receptions, 2.5. Over under on receiving yards, 32.5. Odds on winning the MVP, 75-1. So looking at that right there, if I had to say which props I think are the most fun, to me it's not total receptions, because Mecole to me is a little bit more of a home run guy, but the over-under on 32.5 receiving yards seems like a lot of fun. And just to kind of take a flyer, because, you know, so much of the action is on Tyreek Hill or, you know, Travis Kelce on something like this, 18-1 to score the game's first touchdown I don't think is bad for Mecole Hardman. What I do think is interesting, you know, you listen to some of the media stuff this week. Obviously, we're a Georgia-centric show, so we're interested in Hardman because he's a former dog. But you listen to some of the other stuff that's out there where Super Bowl prop bets are being discussed. I've actually heard Mecole's name fairly prominently mentioned as, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, some of those props that kind of people kind of like related to some of this kind of stuff, because Mecole's one of those guys that could potentially pay off on that. And what this kind of got me thinking is a little bit this. You know, we are in an age right now where everyone's talking about name, image, and likeness when it comes to college football players, and one day allowing players to profit off that name, image, and likeness. In other words, make money on the word that you hear used a lot, which is your brand. And if you watch recruiting stuff, or, you know, for a lot of players who are currently playing college football, it seems like everybody now has their own personal logo. But here's the one thing I think you know, especially if you're related and involved in business in any form or fashion. Just because you have a logo doesn't mean you have a brand. And there are a lot of people who, you know, play college football, aspire to play college football, who hope to make money off their name, image, and likeness, but they don't really have much of a discernible brand. And frankly, it's a very inexact science how you create a brand for yourself or a brand for your organization. These things kind of happen organically. That's why it's so valuable, because you can't push the right series of buttons or pull the right series of levers and create that for yourself. It is, as I said before, kind of an inexact science. But with that in mind, is there any doubt right now that Mecole Hardman has a brand? I think he does. Now, it's not as big as some of the brands, you know, obviously for even guys in this game on Sunday are clearly more famous than Mecole Hardman is, so don't get me wrong on this. But as I said before, McColl's a guy that the prop bet community kind of knows about. I've heard him talked about in circles far removed from Georgia football this week. I think people think of Mecole as kind of a fun player. It was some of the costume stuff that he wore before the playoff games a year ago. The fact that he had kind of a big play penchant while at Georgia has kind of that same, maybe even more so, probably even more so now with Patrick Mahomes throwing to him with the Kansas City Chiefs. And obviously you can kind of connect the dots on this yourself, that brands aren't easy to cultivate. Somehow McColl has kind of found one for himself. And while eventually I think he'll profit off that in his own kind of endorsement world, there is a little bit of ancillary benefit for this for Georgia too. I mean, Georgia got that long streak of having guys in the Super Bowl. It's not quite what Penn State put out there on social media that you may have seen about having someone played in every Super Bowl ever except for five. I mean, Georgia's actually got a pretty good little streak here of guys being in the Super Bowl, but in recent years, I don't know that anyone has kind of earned more attention for himself than what Mecole Hardman has. And in a time in which wide receiver is going to be a very important position for Georgia in the 2022 class, seeing Hardman in such a spotlight on Sunday in the biggest game of them all, that's great for Mecole Hardman. I'm rooting for him to do well, but selfishly, I also like the fact that it's pretty good for Georgia too. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Kroger. So glad to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. For those of you on Twitch who are watching now, that's our newest video platform. Thank you so much for watching over there. Appreciate that. Of course, podcasts on the Apple Player, the Google Player, the world-famous DogNation.com. We post the show every day. Some of you listen straight through SoundCloud, Spotify, all the really cool podcast platforms. Thanks for being here. And for our friends who tune in every day on the radio and Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, we certainly appreciate you as well. And a big thanks to Kroger for making it all possible. You know, I mentioned the big game before. Of course, Kroger, the one to turn to as you get stocked up for your big party for the big game, whether it be, you know, party platters, beverages, whatever else. They've got big deals on your big game meal, so check that out. All your Super Bowl needs filled right there with our friends at Kroger. I hope that you will check that out. Coming up in just a couple of moments, we're going to talk to Jeff Sintel on the program today. Before we do that, let me go around the doghouse, and this is one of those things that there's a chance it could be interesting only to me, but hopefully I can find a way to make this kind of interesting to you. So Football Scoop, which is a website that I really like, is it's basically like the epicenter for all the college football rumor stuff, you know, the coaching rumor mill, you know, who's taking what job, who's leaving, who's getting promoted, whatever else. Football Scoop has kind of owned a certain corner of that market for a long time. And they did a story last couple days about Dan Lanning, the raise that he's getting, you know, knocking on the door now for him, $2 million. I think he's like $1.8 million a year, whatever else. But there was something in the story that Football Scoop did that kind of got my attention. They kind of referenced the USA Today, big media outlet, always does a database of football coaching salaries, both for head coaches and assistants, and they were looking at the top 10 assistant coaches from a year ago. And when you pay close attention to this, I don't know, it's kind of interesting. We don't really quite know yet where Lanning's going to rank on next year's list of highest paid assistants, because some of that kind of stuff with the other programs is still being kind of sifted through. But when you look at last year's highest ranking, you know, and guys making more than $2 million and, you know, things like that, it's kind of amazing how varied the results were for all of these guys. For instance, of the top three highest paid assistant coaches in the country a year ago, something Lanning won't be top three in probably this year, but he's going to be in that top 10 somewhere when it's all said and done. But listen to the differences in results. Steve Sarkisian graduated from Alabama offensive coordinator. He's now Texas head coach, so smashing success for him. On the other side of that, Bo Pelini, hired to be LSU defensive coordinator, they fired him after 1 year, so completely different. The third guy in that top three was Kevin Steele, who I think folks would say did a good job with the Auburn defense, but, you know, he's kind of, after a weird scenario at Tennessee, kind of left looking for a job himself. So all three of the highest paid assistant coaches in the country a year ago will not be working at their same school this upcoming year for different reasons, obviously Sarkisian getting the big promotion. Then other than that, when you look at other guys kind of rated in the top 10 of highest paid assistant coaches a year ago, you had Don Brown, Michigan defensive coordinator, total disaster there for the Wolverines. Jim Chaney, by the way, speaking of rumor mills, Jim Chaney, Tennessee offensive coordinator, among the highest paid a year ago, complete disaster for the Vols. Now, why am I telling you all of this? I think when you look at Dan Lanning earning the raise that he got at Georgia, and when you think about Todd Monken here too, who Georgia hired a year ago, when you look at the highest paid assistants in the country, now there are guys like Mike Elko from Texas A&M on there. Aggie's very happy with him. Brent Venables, Clemson, he's earned big money with the Tigers over the years. They're happy with him. So there are top 10 highest paid assistant coaches who are doing very well. But when you think about some of the other guys, you know, the resource to hire whatever assistant coach you wanted to hire and they still don't work out, I think what you're left to understand here is there is no perfect way to make sure you have a great assistant coach. And some programs, think of themselves as power programs, have just swung and missed in their attempt to hire one. So the fact that Georgia has a defensive coordinator that feels like it wants to promote, or should say give a raise to, the fact that Georgia has an offensive coordinator right now in Todd Monken that I believe almost every Georgia fan is really happy with, the fact that those things exist for Georgia right now is really no small feat. That Georgia starts the 2021 cycle here, heading towards the fall of 2021, with two coordinators that it feels really good about, one that it was just very glad to give a big raise to. That puts Georgia in a category that a lot of college football programs cannot join right now. That's at least worth considering as Dan Lanning gets his big raise. It is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Kroger. We got a lot to do before we're done today. Really fun edition of our Golden Shoe to award later on as a part of our Gator Hater roll call. We'll also look ahead of that game against those lousy, stinking Gators before it's all said and done, and some SEC news to cover as well. But what do you say now? We cover everything related to UGA recruiting. Let's do that with Dog Nation's recruiting insider, Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Salute to Jeff Sintel here. Always fun to talk some UGA recruiting with him. Had a good time last night as well on our Cover 4 Live. Everybody, Mike Griffith, enjoying some vacation, but we were still able to do a version of that show and had a good time doing it. Jeff, you know, I don't really know, like, how to even, you know, start all this, but it was interesting to hear Kirby Smart, the Georgia coach, on 680 The Fan this week, at least leaving the door open that maybe something could be added to the 2021 class, referencing high school kids in particular. We're thinking transfer portal for Georgia. We're thinking, you know, veteran defensive back in some cases to maybe bolster what looks like a secondary that could use some experience. And yet Smart also giving us at least a little bit of a tease to an outside-the-box name that could still be added here. What do you make of those cryptic words from Kirby Smart? Is he just pulling our leg and having fun, or you think there's something to all of that?
I think he's just trying to leave things open a little bit. If you had to ask me, the most likely candidates for roster additions for Georgia in 2021 would still be graduate transfer DB, graduate transfer, maybe a wide receiver, but also transfer portal at both of those positions. But I think what Smart is referring to there is he's referring to, remember, Brandon, maybe half the country, at least a good third of the country, didn't get a football season, a senior football season, and they're playing it in spring. So there's always the chance where Georgia might identify a young man that maybe his grades get better, maybe his football game gets a lot better. Remember, Georgia was known for, in the last couple of cycles, of finding guys in their senior year and those senior year offers. I think when he's talking about outside the box, he's kind of looking for every possible opportunity. And it might even be, you know, the one thing I'll stress this week that's kind of unique to this National Signing Day week in particular is there's been some buzz. The addition of Logan Johnson, the addition of Cash Jones out of Texas.
That's the running back?
That's the running back, Brandon. He's got he's a three-star. He had some offers from Florida Atlantic, Florida International, Army, New Mexico State. He was committed to them at one time. But, Brandon, I think Cash Jones could come into the Georgia running back room and earn some time. He's played small school Texas football. In Texas, you're considered a small school football player when your school's a 3A school. That's considered small in Texas because everything's bigger in Texas.
Sure.
But, you know, Brandon, he's got 4.4 speed. He's got 6 feet, 185 pounds. He's kind of one of those competition surfers. There's some video on forum.dognation.com.
Wait, where's he surfing in Texas? Is he going down to Galveston Island? Where's he surfing in Texas?
I think Arizona, maybe some areas around there, lake area. He's doing some wakeboarding. He's in the air. He's doing aerials. He's a guy that can throw a football a long way. He can play the slot. He can return kicks. He's about six feet tall, 5'11 and a half, about 185, 190 pounds. And here's the big one for me. He has 79 career touchdowns. He had 39, I believe, this year. He ran for over 2,300 yards as a marked man in Texas football. And you know, that's a guy where you start wondering, you know, is this guy going to come in and be the number one back? No, of course not. But I think Cash Jones and Logan Johnson, especially when you consider Logan as a punt returner, I think the way Georgia's adding some talent to the roster that way through the preferred walk-on realm, I don't think these guys are going to stay. Should they hit, they might not stay preferred walk-ons long. You know, Logan Johnson could be a punt returner a couple years in Athens besides being basically unguardable on the scout team. And then you got a guy like Cash Jones who's going to be as athletic as any running back Georgia has in that room right now, with a lot of intrigue about what he can possibly be at Georgia.
Well, I'll say this, and what you just said and described is very interesting, but to go back to the first part of what you said there about identifying someone who kind of came on late, maybe figured something out academically, I won't pretend to know what anybody's grades are, but that's an interesting description. It reminds me so much of a conversation that you and I had way back in 2016 related to someone like Brian Herring, who I did not know at all when Georgia brought him on. I think a lot of folks were kind of caught off guard by Herring too, but it was obvious from the get go that he could play. And had Georgia not been as deep at running back as it was over those years, Herring would have played a lot more and I think could have had some really big stats. He just happened to play at a historically good, you know, running back position group for Georgia. But that's a guy that you want to talk about, you know, advanced scouting and identifying someone who wasn't on a lot of others' radar. I'm not saying that Georgia's about to get the next Brian Herring, and that's not what I'm doing. I'm saying that when it comes to, you know, identifying players that other programs weren't necessarily on, we've got examples of Georgia doing that before.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Especially, I think about, you know, one of the areas, Brandon, that I think is going to be hit the hardest by that, besides the 2021 senior class, with a lot of guys that were maybe not as good as they didn't keep getting better their senior year. Maybe they topped out as a junior. They may be going to places where they're really not good enough to play right away, or those other young kids that may be signed at a group of five that are actually a lot better than that. I'm sure there's a lot of young men like kind of those Justin Schaefers of the world that, you know, Georgia had a different evaluation on Justin Schaefer once Sam Pittman came into the program. He kind of fit what Georgia was looking for. And I think what Georgia's trying to do, find that speedy, agile receiver. You've seen that a couple of times with what they've tried to do with Ladd McConkey. And now the Logan Johnson preferred walk-on recruitment. They're trying to find Jimmy Horn Jr. Let me throw that name into the mix as well. They're trying to find that guy that's, you know, maybe undersized, but just cannot be checked and shadowed on a football field, even by some of the All-American DBs and cornerbacks that Georgia tries to bring in.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. Let's talk about a big win for Georgia on the recruiting trail this week. And you and I have done a little bit of this on some of our other broadcasts before, but I do think that Bear Alexander is a fascinating prospect. And I think the story of how Georgia won this one as early in the 2022 cycle as it did is also in its own right pretty fascinating here. My guess is they probably have to still fight to keep him somewhere along the way. But the fact that you hold the public pledge right now is a pretty big step towards being able to do that. Tell us kind of how a lot of this kind of came together for Georgia with Alexander, who, you know, listen, there's not going to be a cycle when Georgia doesn't want a big defensive lineman like this. This is a big get here. How did Georgia do it?
I think Georgia was prioritizing Big Bear Alexander from when I spoke to him last season, last October, last November. Georgia was already prioritizing him. Maybe not the exact Mason Smith treatment. Everybody remembers that name from the 2021 cycle, but they were already prioritizing him. Kirby Smart was talking to him, sending him messages often. Travion Scott was too. Dan Lanning was. They were really bringing all the Bulldog horses and all the Bulldog men to this recruiting. And then Big Bear Alexander, I want to make sure I get that nomenclature right. He has family in Georgia. That was another help. And for me, knowing his story, well, knowing what he's been through a lot of hardships in his life. A great mentor has came into his life and kind of gotten him away from some bad influences. He's had a couple of transfers, but he's a guy now that stresses academics, but he's a guy who told me, I remember those conversations in October and November when it sounded like Georgia was doing an awfully good job of recruiting him. And I was like, this is a guy that I can really see at Georgia already. But then he said, but hey, man, I'm going to take as long as I can. I'm going to take as much time as possible to make my decision. I'm going to be a last-minute guy. And then abruptly, maybe it's the pandemic nature. He knows he's going to graduate early. He says, man, this is a really short time. I have 11 months before I need to be in college. I wanted to go ahead and lock it down. And he very matter-of-factly said, I was just ready to go ahead and make this decision. He seems thrilled on social media. He was a jubilant young man on National Signing Day celebrating his commitment to Georgia. There are a lot of elements that make me think this one can stick, even though he's from the state of Texas. And from a lot of sources I have around that state, they tell me that really the only school to worry about is probably Texas A&M. Yeah. Now, everybody's going to try. Oklahoma, Texas, of course, the new push from Sarkisian. the new coach Sarkisian in there is going to boost those recruiting efforts. See, Peaches the dog approves of that conversation right there. About
yeah, I mean, if you wanted the best sound effect, you got to go bear growl, not dog bark. It's going to be, if you really want to go sound effect here, it's going to be bear growl, not dog bark.
Peaches is working on her bear growl. I told her that I try to do some Ace Ventura pet detective and be like channel some grizzly, but I think she's just working on a very, really perturbed golden doodle right now. Maybe a hangry goat. Angry golden doodle.
I understand that. I understand that for sure. You know, we talked about this last night a little bit on Cover 4 Live, and I kind of make my case for Trey Scott being maybe among the biggest stars in the rise among the ranks of Georgia assistants. And, you know, we can have some fun debating that. But, you know, wherever you rank him on that list of current UGA assistants, there's no doubt that he's paying huge dividends. Jalen Carter looks like a big-time player. That's a win that Trey Scott's involved with. You know, Trayvon Walker is still a guy that I'm incredibly high on. I think he's going to have a huge year in 2021. Trey Scott's DNA is all over that, you know, addition to the Georgia roster going back to the class of 2019. That Scott is just doing big things and laying the groundwork for the rest of the 2022 cycle by jumping in there and, you know, getting a Bear Alexander to kind of close out the 2021 day on National Signing Day. I just think that's a real indication of a guy who's getting it done with his unit on the field and certainly on the recruiting trail as well.
Well, Brandon, I guess I'm not meant to do this on your program, but I guess I'm going to share a little data that makes you sound pretty smart. I know a lot of folks out there judge recruiting and recruiters by that short attention span theater, what have you done for me lately? And if you had to pick every Georgia coach's, now it's going to be different because offensive linemen and defensive linemen can sign more guys, but if you had to pick every Georgia coach's best five jewels that they've brought in or simply their best five recruits over the last 2 years, I think Trey Scott's resume is going to stack up when you start mentioning Jalen Carter. You mentioned Big Bear Alexander. You mentioned Tyree West already. Mentioned Tyree and Ingram Dawkins. There's a lot of juice right there. You know, Jalen Carter, I think we mentioned him earlier. But you go to five right there in the last two cycles. You can't even, and I'm not even counting Trayvon Walker because that's outside the last 2 years here. But, man, those five guys, I mean, I'm sure Matt Luke's stats are going to look strong there in terms of the last five big guys. And if you wanted to maybe double the work from Todd Monken because you can't sign five quarterbacks in a class, although Georgia tries to get 3 5 stars in one calendar year somehow with portal and 2021 class and 2022 class. But the work that Trey Scott is putting up, developing guys, you see what he's done developing Jordan Davis as well. That's now a very, very big position of strength for Georgia on the recruiting trail. Whereas you couldn't say that maybe 2016, 2017, I think Trayvon Scott, when Kirby announced all those, Coach Smart announced all those raises this week, I was looking for a little bit more coin there for Trey Scott because I think he's deserved it as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So that's all the good for Georgia. I do want to do a little bit of an autopsy here on kind of what went wrong for Terry and Arnold choosing Alabama. And the honest truth is, in retrospect, I'm really not quite so sure Georgia could have done anything different on all of this. Alabama's got a lot to offer right now and a lot to certainly provide in terms of evidence for why Terry and Arnold should make that choice. It seems like at the end of the day, that's what won out there. This will be the last time we probably talk about Arnold until he does something on the field for the Crimson Tide. And so with that in mind, you know, what do you want to say here to conclude the chapter of Georgia's recruitment of Terry and Arnold?
Great player. I think I know what's going to happen when Georgia meets Alabama next couple of years at SEC championship games. Very likely that see that happening with Alabama possibly signing the greatest recruiting class of all time, even beating some Florida work in 2010 and then what they did in 2017. I know he's going to be a dynamic player. He's going to be a great return man. He's going to be a great safety, ball hawk, cornerback. Georgia and Alabama both saw him as a corner. I just see him as a very strong asset for Alabama's program. The autopsy part of it, yeah, I think it is what it is, my friend. I think it's just what Alabama does right and what Alabama did over the past year even better than even before. Alabama's brand somehow got stronger in the 2020 season, and that's very hard to do considering they're kind of the Ming dynasty of college football right now, going on 14 years or so. There's just, and I don't care how you say it, it's just really hard for anybody to paint a picture, especially not face-to-face. It's very hard for anybody to paint a picture and say, you know what, I think Georgia's next 3 years with you in it are going to be better than Alabama's next 3 years with you in it. It's just very hard. There's just so much raw data that says the Crimson Tide is not going anywhere. And there was a point where Georgia led for Terrion Arnold. I think there was a long time where Georgia led for Terrion Arnold. He was one of those guys that I kind of think, you know, I got a piece coming up later today on DogNation.com that's sort of like a Wikipedia page for everything that I think folks need to know about the 2021 recruiting class. And for me, I mean, it just goes to show in a normal year, you wonder if Georgia's defensive back haul is very good, still the best in the SEC outside of Alabama. But you just wonder what could have happened in a normal year with different names, the James Williamses, the Tony Grimes, the Terrion Arnolds, even a Jordan Hancock, even a Nate Wiggins, Nathaniel Wiggins. As good as this class is, Georgia's class could have been even stronger. And I think that's what you need. I know everybody's tired of, you know, kicking the heels of the elephant there, trying to figure out how Georgia catches up with Alabama. But that was a monster year. And I think Terrion just looked at it and said, you know, I'd be great at Georgia. I'd be fine at Georgia. I can get to where I need to be at Georgia. But then he probably could feel that same way and a little bit more about everything going on at Alabama. One of the things he did notice was Tyreek Stevenson transferring out, Devon Wilson transferring out. He didn't see those same things at Alabama with some guys that were contributors already transferring out from the defensive back group for some reason.
So let me just say this, and this is not revisionist history. I've been saying this for a while. I played a clip on the show the other day of the interview that you did with Gunnar Stockton, where Stockton talked about this is a place where I can win a national championship, but it's also a place in which I feel comfortable with relationships that I have with coaches, things like that. And really, for me, that's what I want to hear recruits say about Georgia. I think Georgia's destination as a business decision is on its way to growing. You're going to see guys drafted highly this upcoming spring. You know, Tyson Campbell could be a first-round pick. That adds to the credentials that Georgia can be as a business decision for players in that position group, like Terrion Arnold. You know, Azeez Ojulari is going to add to that for that position group there as well. So Georgia as a destination business decision style recruitment is on its way up. But Jeff, as a fan of the Dogs, I never want Georgia to only be a business decision. I never want this to be, you know, a situation where you got 10 coaches, 85 players, all kind of on these mercenary contracts here just to win as much as they can for 3 years and then move on and, you know, kind of view everything and sort of these sort of stark terms. You know, I like the idea of Georgia being able to sell relationships. And this year in recruiting, that was really hard to do because there weren't visits, there weren't things like that. But I do truly believe that, you know, the recruiting momentum that Alabama enjoyed this year is always going to be, you know, significant because they're obviously a great program. But it could have been upended some if more guys could have cultivated the relationship part of this with Georgia. This was a year in which that was hard to do. And, you know, frankly, I'm not going to get too worked up over Bama, greatest class of all time, given the unusual circumstances, I believe, that contributed to that.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Brandon. It's kind of funny as Georgia's exposure and national footprint grew in year two under Kirby Smart with the Rose Bowl win and the national championship appearance. It opened up so many zip codes for Georgia to recruit. And, man, there's a very fine line for it in my book where, yeah, you want to get the very best players, especially now that you can get them. A lot of times college kids were hardwired to escape the nest and do something new and experience that different world and flap their wings on their own. But to me, there's a healthy balance there where you need guys on the roster that if Georgia loses to Georgia Tech or Georgia loses to Florida or Georgia loses to Tennessee, like, they're going to feel, I don't want to say shamed, maybe scorned, maybe major PO'd that that happened while they were in wearing red and black, and they would stew about that in the weight room and on the practice field and on the grass for the next year in order to rectify that. There's a very fine line between that elite talent. Like, when a lot of guys come into Georgia, even these new national guys, and someone has to be taught about, you know, to, as what Dan McGill used to say, the great Dan McGill used to say, the late great Dan McGill used to say, to hell with Tech. And the way that, just the way things are with certain Georgia rivals that don't pop nationally. They just know what it means to be a Georgia Bulldog on a Saturday night after beating a rival, and how the Tennessees and the South Carolinas and the Georgia Techs and the Floridas, that's a game you got to win. Otherwise, if you go back home, folks are going to chew on you about it. I think you got to find a healthy balance of all that. And, you know, the thing there with that's in the way, you've got Alabama, of course. There's a lot of momentum, and I'm trying to see if I can just bullseye the way the feeling is. There's a lot of momentum that guys come to Georgia thinking we can be the new Alabama or we can do Alabama things. But it's so very hard to win a head-to-head race with Alabama when Alabama's still doing those Alabama things. It's more like, why should I go to Georgia and do Alabama to have Alabama-type success when I can just go to the proven gold standard and kind of rinse, wash, and repeat and do that old thing? I think there's a balance. A guy like, you mentioned Gunnar Stockton, a guy like Micah Morris, Brandon, is a guy that comes to my mind in terms of, that's the All-American offensive lineman from South Georgia. Alabama wanted him too, of course. Everybody wanted him, but Micah was just a purposeful young man that just wanted to be a Georgia Bulldog. Didn't matter who the line coach was. He just loved to fit there a little bit better than everyone else. And I think you need to have a healthy balance of all that talent and game-breaker, jaw-dropping, first-round future NFL draft pick with those guys who know what it means to wear that red and black and a standard they've got to play toward.
You know, Jeff, it's great stuff. I appreciate that. You also had really, really interesting interviews this week as part of Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, going back to Wednesday. Gunnar Stockton, I hope people will see that for themselves. I wanted to talk to you about some of these 2022 wide receivers. I'm a little short on time. I certainly don't want to keep you too long today. So let me just invite people to check out everything you've been doing on both DogNation.com and the Dog Nation video channels. And that'll set us up to talk about, you know, 2022 receivers and some of these targets, such as, you know, Oscar Delp and Kojo Antwi, that have certainly paid notice to the fact that Gunnar Stockton is now a part of Georgia's 2022 class. That's all up on all the Dog Nation platforms. Folks can check that out for themselves, and I'll look forward to chatting with you on that again very soon. Jeff, for now, thank you so much for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, and I can't wait to get a chance to talk to you again very soon as well.
All right, Brandon. Hey, man, thanks for having me on. Everybody have a great weekend.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So let me just say this really quickly when it comes to Georgia's pursuit of Alabama and what obviously has to be done. And it's never been more obvious than it is right now. When you lose these recruiting battles and Alabama simply sells its prestige, the number of draft picks that it's had, the number of championships that it's played for and then won, then obviously, you've got to produce the kind of NFL talent for your program that gives you a chance to beat Alabama on the field, maybe as soon as this December. And that can seem like a daunting task because when it comes to the 2021 class, it clearly seems to be an example of the rich getting richer. But here is something that maybe it's not specifically optimistic news related to Georgia, but it just is in a general sense kind of optimistic. I said this last night when it comes to Alabama. That when they are on top of the college football world, it becomes difficult to imagine a time in which they ever weren't. That no one has ever had any success against Alabama, it seems, because of how good they appear to be this past year. But listen, the world didn't begin back in September. You know, we've been around and following all this stuff closely for a number of years, and there are some programs that have found a way to have some success against Alabama. Clemson's beaten them twice since 2016. Auburn's beaten them twice since 2017. LSU beat them on the road in 2019 and went on to win a national championship by doing so. And those three programs that I just mentioned that have had success against Alabama, none of those three had as much measurable talent on their roster as Alabama did on the basis of recruiting rankings. Now, LSU recruits at an extraordinarily high level. Clemson recruits at an extraordinary high level. But there is a gap between what those programs do and what Alabama has done. And there's an even bigger gap when it comes to what Auburn had been doing and what Alabama had done, even in the years in which Auburn got that win in 2017 and in 2019. So the point here is that there is another way to beat Alabama other than just having players as good or better than Alabama. And to Georgia's credit, you know, once again, the world didn't just begin this year. You look at the last 4 years' worth of recruiting rankings, last 5 years' worth of recruiting rankings, Georgia's actually doing pretty well side by side in comparison to Alabama when it comes to recruiting. But there's obviously that need to now take the next step and win on the field. Clemson's done it, I would say, with better quarterbacks. Head-to-head in 2016, Deshaun Watson outplays Jalen Hurts. Head-to-head in 2018, Trevor Lawrence outplays Tua Tagovailoa. You can beat Bama by having the better quarterback. Joe Burrow did that in 2019. LSU also did that with better scheme. Maybe you could say that's part of what Auburn used to its advantage in 2017, 2019. Malzahn specifically making some calls in the game that probably outcoached Nick Saban, especially in the 2019 game. That clearly comes to mind with some of the late game stuff that was going on there. So there are ways to beat Alabama other than out-recruiting them. Three programs I just mentioned have done exactly that. And now Georgia, well, if it gets a chance to play Alabama come December, will try to be the next in the line on that front. Let's do some SEC through stuff here. Couple stories around the league. Let me start basketball-wise because this impacts Georgia. The Texas A&M at Arkansas game slated for tomorrow has been postponed due to coronavirus with one of the teams. So Georgia's game that was supposed to be at, I think, 1 p.m. has now been moved to 6 p.m. So Georgia hosts Vanderbilt tomorrow at 6 p.m. And I know this is kind of a big deal for Georgia basketball, so I'll give them a little shout-out in reference to this. There's a limited number of tickets. It's like fewer than 2,000 tickets available for a game like this because of the obvious social distancing measures. If you've got the tickets, and I'm saying this as someone who wants to see some sort of home court advantage for Georgia tomorrow in a game that actually is fairly big, air quotes around fairly and big, but if you got tickets, please use them. And if you don't, if you're not going to use them, then give them to somebody else. We need, if you're a Georgia fan, you want as many Georgia fans in the gym tomorrow as you can get. So for the limited number of tickets that are out there, let's make sure we get those in the hands of people that are going to use them. I'm going to say that as a little bit of a PSA. Here's something that's fun. Tennessee's defensive coordinator search right now appears to be an unmitigated disaster. This is kind of going, you know, quietly because there's so much else going on in the world. It seems like Tennessee's been such a disaster as of late that, you know, maybe people have Tennessee disaster fatigue. But my, oh my, it seems like this is not going well at all. Bruce Feldman from The Athletic reporting that Brian Brown, the Louisville defensive coordinator, has outright turned down that job. Imagine thinking defensive coordinator at a place like Louisville is a better job than a place like Tennessee. That's how much the perception of Tennessee's been tarnished as of late. I'll take it a step further. Football Scoop is reporting, I mentioned Football Scoop a little earlier in the show, Football Scoop is reporting that Todd Orlando, the USC defensive coordinator, is turning down a chance to come to the Vols there as well. Now, USC, you know, you might think of that as a place that you don't typically leave, you know, to go to Tennessee. You know, USC is kind of a power program. But my gosh, that entire coaching staff at USC has seemingly been on shaky ground there for a while. All of a sudden, if you're at USC and you think that job seems more stable than the situation at Tennessee, that is not a good thing at all. I also saw this from Football Scoop. I think this is funny. Have no fear, Vols fans. According to Football Scoop, the inside word from Tennessee is there's actually an NFL defensive assistant who's been in the playoffs who is interested in this job. This sort of reminds me back when you're in high school, when you were like telling your friends, hey, I've got a girlfriend, but you haven't met her. She lives in Canada. This is sort of that version of that of, hey, I know it seems like we're being turned down for defensive coordinators, you know, left and right, but trust us, we got somebody who's interested in this job. In fact, this is a guy that was an assistant on an NFL playoff team here thus far this year. That kind of sounds a little bit like that to me. Let me just do one more story. Barry Odom gets a big raise from Arkansas. This is kind of the year, the time of year in which those raises get announced. I'm telling you, this is very, very quiet, but very much worth paying attention to, especially knowing the fact that Georgia plays Arkansas again this year. Odom did good things for that Arkansas defense, at least for the like first three quarters of the year. They kind of fell apart a little bit defensively late in the year, but they were good defensively for most of the season. And Odom, former SEC head coach, had a lot of programs coming to call on him. There was even a rumor at one point in time that Texas may have been interested. Arkansas holding on to Barry Odom, I think, is quietly a real sign of stability for Sam Pittman, especially in comparison to the absolute mass chaos that exists across the other, you know, world of the SEC. And keep your eye on this. Steve Sarkisian, Texas, very early in the season. It's like week one, week two. I can't remember the specific week. Very early in the season against Sam Pittman in Arkansas. Wouldn't that be a big win for, because the Arkansas fans hate Texas. They hate Texas. This goes back decades. If Pittman could give that Arkansas bunch a win over Texas, that'd be quite a trophy on the wall for him in his early days there as the Razorbacks coach. Keeping Barry Odom as a step towards being able to do that, and, you know, kind of keeping pace in the arms race that is the SEC, we will make that your SEC through. And as we wrap up today, we all, of course, do our Gator Hater roll call. We love the fact that Gator Hayton stretches not just throughout the borders of the state of Georgia here, but everywhere the Dog Nation stretches, which means around the country and around the world. And with that in mind, let me award today's Golden Shoe winner to our friend. Let me show you this on the screen here. Really, really cool a picture that someone sent to me of the Wisconsin license plate with the Gator Hater on that. This is a really, really cool look. It's like minus 11 degrees. And Jet Python on Twitter sent this to me. He says, even though it'll be minus 11 tonight, we can still hate those lousy stinking Gators up here in Wisconsin. Go Dogs. Get the snow on the car, the Gator Hater license plate. Jet Python, that's really cool to be able to see. I appreciate that. And I'm sure you join me in saying that 267 days from right now, as a part of our Gator Hater countdown, can't wait to see the Dogs get some revenge against the Gators. Y'all have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday for Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.